Session number 9956.
Michael Owen, Reel 6. What happened when you went to pick up the prisoners at Oran?
Well, it was either Oran or Mersel Kabir, which was very close. To my knowledge, I think it could have been Mersel Kabir. Anyway, these prisoners were mostly naval. They came on board, and amongst the prisoners was a well-known character called Commander Woodruff. You may remember the famous talk he gave on the BBC, where at the coronation, would it be, before the war, when he was drunk, and
oh, the review.
When he said the fleet split up. Well, he was one of the prisoners. And they were not at all friendly towards the French. They had had a rotten time, which is understandable, and it's understandable from the French point of view, I suppose. But we took them to Gibraltar. So we took them to Gibraltar and arrived Gibraltar, I would say, the night of the 14th, 15th. November, because that was important.
Did you get to know Woodruff?
Oh yes, there was great fun. He was, and obviously in the bar. The bar was open, and it was great fun. He was a wonderful man.
What sort of man was he? In
great that? Sense of humour, and he was a celebrity, of course, being fleet lit up. He was first class.
Was he a bit of a drunkard, or was that just a?
I can't remember. We all drank, but I honestly can't remember if he did. I wouldn't have blamed him after the experience he'd gone through, because these two ships were, well, I say they were sunk in Oran Harbour, and they were machine gun. They were terribly badly treated.
You got to Gibraltar, I think you said the 15th.
Yes, it must have been it would have been the night of the or afternoon of the 14th, and that began an episode which, of course, I shall never forget. The convoy to proceed home consisted of the aircraft carrier Argus, aircraft carrier Avenger. They were it was an escort to Woolworth destroyer, Woolworth aircraft carrier Avenger, and she had done excellent work in support of the invasion of North Africa, and indeed in the Atlantic. And I believe on Russian convoy, there may have been some of these survivors which we had, poor fellows, put on board. Indeed, I think quite a number were. There was a landing ship infantry, a liner, the Ettrick. There was the headquarters ship Samuel Chase, the American headquarters ship, and Letitia. She was a liner. And two other vessels. Anyway, we left at about 10 o'clock at night, 9 to 10, the sun was setting, and I had a premonition, I think we all did, that something was going to happen, because don't forget the convoy had come in without any opposition, and it was pretty certain that the German submarines were waiting for us when we came out of the Mediterranean. And don't forget also that at Algeciras, the Germans had a spy system. So we were very concerned. So anyway, I went on watch in the Ulster Monarch by myself, off the watch, at midnight. And foolishly, I hadn't taken my life belt. Quite extraordinary, I normally did. And also, I hadn't got a raincoat. When suddenly there was to port Starshell. Subsequently, I was in touch with the U-boat commander, Peening. He wrote to me, told me that we were firing at his barrage of balloons to fox our radar. He had put up balloons, and that is what he was firing at, that this escort vessel was firing at, which, of course, illuminated the convoy. And so there was an emergency turn to starboard, which was given by foghorn signal, you know. I think it would be 45 degrees to starboard, which put the aircraft carrier Avenger directly ahead of us. And then this terrible sight of the Avenger blowing up. Peening, in fact, had let go six... they were the first electric torpedoes of the war, a whole batch of six torpedoes, and two of them hit the petrol storage tank of Avenger, and she blew up with a terrible, terrible sight, terrific flame, explosion, and the Carly float went off in flames to port. I stopped engines. There were little red lights in the water, but there was a ship astern, so we only had, you know, we couldn't go astern. In fact, we went over the Avenger, and I think there was something like 10 survivors out of about 600, a really awful sight. And then the Ettrick, the liner.
She went down very quickly then.
Oh, she blew right up. Whatever was left of her, and God knows what was left, mercifully a quick death for those inside. We were only, what, four cables astern of her, 800 yards. So, and we were going probably about 12 knots or 14 knots, something like that. And I probably did go astern originally, but we went over her. There was a mark under the ship when we went into dry dock, but there was nothing left, obviously, of the ship.
The survivors, the 10 that were picked up, who picked them up?
I don't know. I think that it could have been an escort vessel, because we didn't pick anybody up. There were red lights in the water. If I said that I heard people crying, I don't know. I think that would be an exaggeration, but you could see the red lights. And then this liner, suddenly all her lights went on, and she drifted astern, and she'd been torpedoed. There were only 18 killed on board the liner. And then there was this American Almack, something like that. She was hit, American freighter. But they got her back to to the UK. So not to the UK, to Gibraltar. But that night, it was the 15th at 3 o'clock in the morning. Then the captain came on the bridge. Now, he was a funny one. He was an RNR, had a beard. He was a funny king's coat. He was a funny man. But he hadn't got his life jacket or his raincoat on, and it was starting to drizzle. So I suggested it'd be a good idea for me to go below and get it for him. But he said, no, Owen. And he went below, and he got his life jacket and came up. He knew I hadn't got a life jacket on, which was against orders. But I had half an hour until 4 o'clock, maybe it's later, of agony, because one didn't know if we were going to be torpedoed, and I had no way of protecting myself. So the convoy proceeded, and back to the UK.
You say half an hour of agony. That it was this compounded by having seen the Avenger go?
Yes, because one didn't know how many submarines there were, and whether we were going to be attacked again. We didn't know at the time there was only one submarine. And in effect, I was in, through Dönitz's memoirs, he mentioned Peening. I wrote to the German embassy in London. They gave me the address of Peening, who fortunately survived the war. He died 3 years ago. I corresponded with him, and I have letters from him as to what happened. From his point of view, he didn't know until after the war that he had sunk these ships. It was only when he compared his log with the Admiralty log, because the German U-boat commanders, I assume, must have come to the Admiralty after the war, that he knew that he had caused this terrible, tragic loss.
Did you bear him any malice?
None at all. A most very, very brave man. He was fighting for his country, and he was a successful U-boat commander, and I was very, very pleased that he'd survived. I think he became in charge of amphibious warfare. He carried on in the Navy. I think he must have been a nicer man than Kreischmeier, who was the U-boat ace. But I've heard stories about him, and I didn't like him at all, from what I've heard. But this man, Peening, very brave, fine man, fine man.
So the convoy went on?
Yes, and there was no further attacks, and we came back to the tail of the bank. We went back to Halingon, to the best of my knowledge, and at that stage, my crew were creating a lot of trouble. They were very annoyed at not having gone into the operation, and it was the first time that I'd had trouble with them. Subsequently...
What sort of trouble were they... They couldn't, of course, go with Powers... LCMS.
They didn't know anything about Power.
They'd stayed behind.
Yes.
What sort of trouble were they giving you? You say they gave you trouble.
Obstinate. They said that I had no right to go in and go in to the action. They were dying to go into action, you see, and that I had no right. I should have stayed by my craft. And, of course, I pointed out that I was a senior officer and had to get Colonel Darby in. There were various factions.
Without wishing, that seems strange and must have been on an informal basis, because isn't regular Royal Naval custom for an officer to explain what's happening.
But I did that. We were a small craft, and I had to get the confidence of my crew.
Would talk to them man to man?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Oh, no doubt about it.
Was that a first names, basically?
No, Christian names. Oh, no, wouldn't do that. But what actually happened with them, we sailed for round the Cape to Sicily. Now, Christmas, I gave them a turkey just to pacify them. Now, when did we leave for Sicily? It must have been, I would suggest... About January, perhaps, 1943.
Still on the Durban Castle?
Still in the Ulster Monarch. In the Ulster Monarch. And we were the smallest ship. Don't forget, she was only a passenger ship that crossed from Belfast to Liverpool. And she was very small indeed. So we sailed without troops. Suez. Now, we put into Gibraltar on our own because we had to have water. We put into Pointe Noire, Portuguese West Africa. We put into Cape Town. Now, in 43, it was almost the height of U-boat warfare, and being on our own without escort was a little frightening. I remember in Cape Town, we moved from Cape Town up to Durban, and there was an officer, a lieutenant, brought on board in Cape Town to be under escort, to be court-martialed. Now, going back, I think there had been parties in Cape Town, cocktail parties, and there had been leakage of information, because don't forget, in South Africa you had the Boers, the Ossewa Brandvak, and they were reporting without any doubt to the Germans, and I think there was great lack of security, because there were a number of ships which were torpedoed, both coming home and going out off South Africa, off Cape Town at that time. Now, this officer, I remember, was brought on board. One felt sorry for him, but we went round to Durban, up to Mombasa, and I remember going up to Mombasa. There was one of our ships was sunk off the Indian Ocean, and we had these reports coming in of. Presumably from the boats, and then it stopped. And one felt, well, they would be seen again. Anyway, up to port side.
On a long journey like this, on your own, in a small ship, as you said, Would you get very tense?
Yes. Yes. The captain was not liked by myself or, funnily enough, an RN lieutenant called Jones, who was to be a beachmaster. He was, in fact, killed, a very nice man. Jones and I did not see eye to eye with the captain.
About what? He was well, R&R,
Yes. I'll tell you. When we were at anchor, after North Africa, at the tail of the bank, we had an awful incident. He utilized our landing craft at his command to go ashore, which is fair enough. But he secured one afternoon, a landing craft astern. And I said to him that it was absurd, the weather was getting bad, and that this landing craft should be hoisted. He refused. The weather did get bad, and we had to send three ratings over the side in the stern to man the landing craft, bring her alongside the falls and hoist her. This is a very dangerous operation. The stoker, I think it was, he went down the ladder, Jacob's ladder, and the landing craft had a cockpit, steel cockpit. You know, you've seen the landing craft, the ordinary landing craft with the steel cockpit. And the cockpit was going up and down with the landing craft. And this man, I remember he worked for Procter & Gamble, he suddenly yelled to me, "I've lost my foot, sir." What had happened was he'd put his foot on top of the steel cockpit and it had come up against the rubbing strake and taken his foot off. That should never have happened. The captain should have had that craft hoisted. He was an RNR and he was a terrible disciplinarian. We didn't like him.
What do you mean he was a terrible disciplinarian?
Well, he would take action just to annoy us at times. That, for instance, boat drill. Well, all right, boat drill, we obviously had to have, but he overdid the pudding. There was dissension, certainly.
Now, this is a tenseness amongst the officers. What about the crew? Did they...
I think it'd be bounded off the crew. I objected, for example, to the accommodation of my Royal Marines. He was too tough on them. The food was bad. He could have eased up. He should have eased up, and he didn't.
So there was... It could be called an unhappy ship.
I think it was, yes.
Now, did the additional stress of being under constant threat from torpedoes, did that add anything to the situation?
I wouldn't think so. The fact that we were unescorted, yes, could have been worrying. But we were young, I don't...
You didn't worry too much?
No, I wouldn't think so. We were young, I don't think so.
How did the situation... Now, when you left, you bought your crew a turkey or whatever for Christmas and tried to...
Oh, yes.
How were they responding now?
Well, they were... The quarters, as I say, were bad. They were starting to be rude. And they...
Is that rude to you?
To me, yes. They weren't... after all, they were Royal Marines and they were rude to me and other officers. And what happened was that after the invasion of Sicily, they put a request in to return to... we were in the Mediterranean for some time.
I'll come to that then. So that situation's still bubbling up.
Still bubbling up, yes.
Right, you got to port through to...
We got to Suez and Port Tewfik. And there, all the craft... were assembled, and the 8th Army had come down. They were from the desert, of course, North Africa had been cleared, and this would be, April, May, and they'd anchored they had living quarters ashore, and we went to Aqaba, the Gulf of Aqaba, for an exercise with the 8th Army, General Dempsey, Montgomery, and that was a prelude to the invasion of Sicily.
Do you remember much about this exercise?
Yes, I could remember that the Admiral's barge broke down and he was floating away. They were way out of sight. I remember rescuing him. I remember General Dempsey, most impressed by him, and the Eighth Army. They were superb. His appreciation of what was to happen was extremely good. He was a very fine, almost unknown general. Great man. First class. And I had, by then, caused, I suppose, problems with this captain. And the admiral in charge of the naval section was Admiral Troubridge, who was a very, very fine man. And the captain and I, Captain Kingscote of the Ulster Monarch, and I really had fallen out, and he requested that my landing craft support should be moved elsewhere. And this, in fact, happened. I joined the ship, the Dutch line at Tegelberg. No. Can we? The Dutch line at Tegelberg. She was a very big liner, and half of our flotilla of landing craft assault were, in fact, on board the Dutch liner. So I rejoined my particular crew again, my particular LCA flotilla again.
So all three LC were together?
Yes, the LCAs were together in this in the ship, and I was very happy to leave the Ulster Monarch.
What had caused the final breakdown? Was there any specific incident, or was it a
cumulative? Yeah, I think it was a cumulative. I think that he'd probably reported to Admiral Troubridge this bastard Irwin was a damn nuisance. And he insisted on a disciplinary court for Jones, who, as I say, was killed as a beachmaster when we went in.
What was Jones's real or imagined offence towards the captain, or...?
Look, I'd have to look in my records, but because I have I wrote a lot after the war. I think it was something to do with naval uniform. It was the man Kingscote was crackers, in my view. There was something to do with uniform and discipline. Anyway, I don't know what happened on the outcome of that, but Jones lost his life.
So you transferred to this Dutch line,
yes,
where you are now all together.
That's right.
Flotilla.
That's right. I have to get it right. Whether it was the Tegelberg or the Daniera, one of the two. I've got it in my record, so I can
check
it later.
What was the other ship?
It could be. It could have been the Daniera, which was a Union Castle ship. It could have been the Daniera. I would have to look in my records on that. But I know that the on board were the Green Howards.
I think just the other one, but did your flotilla actually have a name or a number?
Yes, it did. Well, it was 590. Again, I'd have to look my records up. I could do that.
So you transferred to this liner.
Yes.
And what happened next then?
We went through the Suez Canal and we then anchored off Port Said, and I remember the Eighth Army. We were there for several days, going parading to swim, you know. And there was a bubonic plague, and all these wailing Egyptians with their coffins. Where we were swimming at the cemetery close by. I also remember meeting when I was at Denstone as a boy at public school, one of the masters who was a Green Howard. It was quite an occasion to, because I was the same rank as he was. And as I say, there was this left arm bowler, Hedley Verity, with whom I became very friendly.
What was Verity like? He's quite a well known cricketer.
Oh, yes. He should not have gone in. He had dysentery. He had white hair, he looked very old. He should never have gone into it. He was a sick man at the time, in my view. And it was tragic that he should lose his life later in Sicily. But we proceeded to near Syracuse, Avola and Noto, from Portside. Very bad weather, and July, was it 9th, 10th, off, 7 miles off the coast of Sicily, our landing craft were lowered, and in bad weather, we proceeded in towards the beaches.
How did the landing craft handle in bad weather? Your own LCSMs?
Well, it was good. Now I can confirm, my memory is back, it was the Tegelberg. It was the Tegelberg because one of my Royal Marines, McQuillan, who came from Socky Hall Street in Glasgow, Rough Diamond, I told him to, he looked after the stores in this big liner, and he got a bottle of rum, which he told me when my craft was down in the sea, that he got this rum, which he proceeded to go under the bow and drink himself, you see, where he became totally drunk, unbeknown to me at the time. But we suddenly heard, when we were going in, these God Our Help in Ages Past singing, and this was the first indication that something had gone seriously wrong, because these were wacko gliders. They had been towed by Dakotas, American pilots, with our own border regiment. The border regiment had were in these wacko gliders. Flak had gone up, and absolute cowardice, in my view, the American pilots let go these wacko gliders, and a hell of a lot of them went into the sea.
They let go too early.
Too early, and there were terrible casualties. A lot of them were drowned. The first thing that we heard... No, it was the second when we heard this, God Our Help in Ages Past. This was the first, was there were two men holding up a third man, and there was a cry for help, and we got alongside, and just as we got alongside, these two let go of this third man who went down, who was drowned. We got these two on board, and then we heard this singing of God Our Help in Ages Past, and we found these men on the wings of 8 or 10... on the wing of this glider, and we got them on board. And then I said to McQuillan, well, you've got that bottle of rum, bring it out. And, of course, he was absolutely, totally drunk. But there was a quarter left, which was a lifesaver to these chaps. They'd been in the water for long enough. So we got in close to the beach.
So during this initial approach period, you hadn't really been performing a naval or military role. You'd more been a rescue.
Yes, the flotilla had... we'd lost sight of the flotilla, which we were supposed to escort in. I'd lost total sight of it. There was this lighthouse with the light going and the searchlight going over the sea. They knew that we were coming because some of these gliders must have landed ashore. We transferred these survivors when it became light to a landing craft which I think was going out. It had done its job. It landed these people and we transferred it. And then somebody told me that round the corner, around the bay, there was a...
So you didn't assist in the actual landing at all as a support craft?
No. But I was then told that round the bay, a small bay close to where I was, there was an Italian machine gun position in a pillbox, and nobody could land there. So there were some Royal Marine commandos and myself. We decided to go in and tackle this place. So we went round the bend to this bay where we were machine gunned by this Italian machine gun position.
Where were the Royal Marine Commandos? Had they joined your...
The Royal Marine Commandos were in my craft at that time. They were the actual craft that they were annoyed, you know, they'd caused trouble. They were in my landing craft at that time. So they had seen action, or they were seeing action. And this machine gun position opened fire on us where we promptly went aground. And there was a rope round our propeller. But they were firing at these, not Royal Marine, naval commandos who, they were naval commandos who were in a landing craft. So there was one landing craft, my LCSM, and this one landing craft was going towards the beach, and there was some wire entanglement, and they were being fired at by this pillbox position and also against us. When